Blog Talk Radio.
That Beatles song is, you can eat anytime at all. Food is good anytime at all. You know, certain things have an anytime connected to it. And love is an anytime, don't you think? And, you know, talking anytime, saying I'm sorry anytime, saying hello anytime. All right, enough of that stuff. So this is the Paella Show. And I'm excited about this one because it allows me to reminisce. And in our imagination of food today, we're going to travel back to this little campground on an island off Spain called Ibiza, or I say Ibiza with a lisp. And I was so fortunate to spend much time over there. And one of the great things of traveling wherever you go, of course, is food and discovering new things to eat. And, you know, I was really, really unaware for the most part of any kind of traditional Spanish cuisine as far as Spain is concerned. Of course, always had some basic, wonderful carnitas and tacos and burritos. And, of course, Eastern European cooking, which I talk about a lot, but never really had sort of this something that actually came from Spain. My fondest memory is a dish, which I'll tell you the origin of shortly, is paella. And I remember the first time I had it, one of the great weeks at that period of time, during that specific, trip there, I remember taking a week and having a week off there, so I was doing some work and stuff, and just it was like we went on this little journey, and this is the first time to a little beach town, and I love that idea of being able to just sort of ride a bicycle or a scooter or walk, and you walk, and you're walking literally through a little trail through the beach grass until finally you get closer to the water, you can hear it and smell it. And you can hear people vaguely, in the distance, kind of laughing and a wave crashing slightly. And as I get closer, my nose is starting to permeate into something other than seawater and sand and beautiful fresh air. It was like this incredible smell, almost like unidentifiable at first until I finally realized, wait a minute, I think it's kind of like saffron and some sort of a fish. And as we got closer, there was a little teeny hut, literally, I'm not kidding, probably maybe 10 by 10 with some what looked like little barbecue pits, but they were big rings. They were sort of a ring around these big hunks of wood and charcoal. And I eventually found out that this is a paella ring. It's specially designed so when you place a paella pan on top of it, it distributes the heat a specific way and cooks it. And okay, sat down at this absolutely neat little table. Somebody came over, and, of course, the people I was with spoke fluently, and I was just starting to learn a bit, but they ordered this dish, and it came, and let me tell you, it was something else. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to make a paella, and we're going to tell you that the contents of paella, basically speaking, is an incredible rice dish that has all kinds of things in it, and generally the history of this dish, like every culture has, specific rice dishes. Okay, and they become famous in the world culinary stage, like arroz con pollo from Spain, also chicken and rice. Biryani rice from Spain originally, actually, but India, East Indian biryani rice. Jambalaya from Louisiana, rice pilaf from the Middle East, and risotto from Italy. So rice originated in Asia, and along with pasta was brought to, pasta originated in China and brought to the Mediterranean by the Moors. And when the Moors invaded Spain, they sort of brought both products with them. And that's why some dishes, even paellas, are mostly rice, but every now and then I saw this little sort of pasta noodle. And basically casseroles usually were the thing the Moors cooked in most cases, and usually it was rice and some sort of fish, and the custom became, you know, eating rice in Spain, you know, really grew from the Moors landing there and these casseroles. And, you know, Spanish Catholics eventually, Spanish Catholics eventually expelled the Muslims from Spain, but the rice had become a national staple. And let me tell you what, the meaning really, paella, it's originally made by agricultural laborers. They cook this mixture of rice and snails and vegetables in a pan over an open fire, and that's what we're going to do today. It was like first like a communal dish, so basically it was eaten directly from the pan, which you can still do today, and some people do, though. You know, most people like to serve little plates and you pick it out yourself. You know, I'm okay with doing it that way, but you know what I'm saying. Sometimes people do not want to share spoons, or not, you know, they don't want their, you don't want their spoon to be in your food. Eh. And then as they got closer, like, you know, this was an inland dish, believe it or not, as they got closer to adding other things, they could add like eel close to the sea or butter beans, and slowly but surely these paellas added sausage, copying maybe a gumbo, you know, sort of style, and eventually they added chicken, and it evolved and evolved and evolved, and eventually it just became like a very classy dish, you know. Now, it originated in Valencia, where those great oranges come from. Oh, my gosh. And it's like the east coast of Spain, which is just beautiful. And depending on the cooks in that area, paella was always like sort of a staple dish. But listen to this. Aside from the normal seafood and rice, which I'm thinking about sea and Ibiza, then people put the sausage in, and then sometimes they added chicken and sometimes duck and rabbit. Oh, my gosh. And snails. You know, which is interesting, snails were a poor man's dish for the most part because, God, yet look in your garden lately, you know what I mean? And so that was where they were put in. I personally keep those out. I'm sorry about that. It's not something that I recommend for paella. And being a vegetarian until, you know, all these years, I had to look at paella from afar. I had to eat the rice part of it, and some vegetarians, you know, they won't even eat any rice or anything that has any kind of meat on it or whatever. In those days, and even in these days, it's not such a big deal. That's just my philosophy about it. And you really, really get like a certain, you know, just mixed concept flavor with all this stuff. And basically, I love, you know, the word paella because basically it's a French word originally, paella, and that is like a word that actually means pan, okay, big pan. And then eventually, if you get a paella pan, it's called a paella, and it's usually round and shallow, and we're going to use one today. And it's made of polished steel, and it has two handles usually because, you know, it's got to be able to take the heat. Remember, some of the modern paella pans that you buy now, actually one of the stores has coating on it, which makes it a little easier for you to lift. But, hey, don't take a chance. When you're making paella and you're moving the pan, you need to use some towels or some pot holders. All right, Mom. Okay, so anyway, eventually seafood paella, you know, became the staple. And there's a few different types of paella. Okay, and there's paella Valencia, which is like a white rice, sort of a slightly different rice that has like veggies in it. Definitely has more meat in it. And the snail thing, as I said, from the old cultural, you know, original food. And listen, if you like snails, add them. Beans and seasoning, and that's basically it. And then there's de marisco, which is the famous seafood paella, which I remember getting in Spain in several different places the first time at the Barceloneta in Barcelona. Oh, my gosh. Not the first time I had paella, but the first time I had sort of this real seafood mixture. Because if you go into a little small town and make them paella, they may not have all normal things. So just the dish centers around it. So a marisco, if you hear that one, generally that's got like, you know, all the fish and all that stuff. And it replaces the meat. So there's no meat in a marisco. And there's no beans and green vegetables in it either. We're going to make sort of a marisco today with Valencia tendencies, okay? And the mixed paella, which is just a mixta, that's what, with everything. That's whatever you want to put in. So we're going to do more of a mixta today. And that's the exciting part. So, all right, let's get it cooking. We got a lot of stuff to do. And basically in the recipe, what I want you to think about, really, really important, is you know, don't try to do this all in one day. In other words, you're gonna have to do your shopping, and I would do that a little, maybe the day before, because when I tell you about this, there's so many different ways you can do this, and it could end up being seasonal, and it could be based on some of the things you have. So here's a basic shopping list, and I'll just go through it real quick. I'm going to tell you how to get all this information in writing in a short while. Okay, so. Excuse me, boy, I'm informal today. I just drank some delicious cheese and I just had a burp. Okay, sorry about that. Now, you can make your paella to literally have your favorite ingredients. So I'm not going to, some people make two different kinds. So we're going to do the mixed set today because there's just so much. And listen, the whole idea with paella, this is the most important thing. It is a fun thing to cook and get everybody around to participate in this thing. And I'll tell you also, I'm going to put some pictures up on the Foodomania Facebook page of the paella contest that I went to. And in one place where they actually had to use boat oars to stir the paella because it's the world's largest paella pan. And it's roughly about 12 feet, I believe, across in diameter. Let me tell you. All right, here we go. We're not making one that big. So let's start off. We're going to need some very strong, hearty chicken broth. If you have rendered your own, that would be great. We're going to need about 6 to 8 cups of this, okay? The key of a good, delicious paella is saffron. And I would look at almost a teaspoon of saffron. Now, it's very expensive. So you're going to be having to get some of this in advance, hopefully. Don't use imitation saffron. We need the real thing, okay? I'm going to tell you how to prepare your saffron because everybody has different ways of doing it. I don't just put the saffron directly into the food. I actually generate it and steam it a little bit and get a little bit of the liquid out of it with all the saffron, and then I pour that into my mixture. Okay, we're going to need some Spanish paprika. You know, there is a difference. A small onion, I would say onion and peel it. Now, we're going to do a mix of this. So we're going to get 2 small chickens and about maybe 2.5 pounds each. We're going to get 1/2 cup of olive oil today. We're going to do 1/4 pound of really nice sausage. I don't want to put that much in there, but I'm going to give you this chorizo. But what I really will is get some jamón, serrano ham. If you can get a little chunk of some nice smoked ham, I want you to get that. We're going to chunk that up into like little cubes, okay? Now, I want to take that another medium onion, but this one I want really chopped really well. I want about 1/3 cup of scallions. I want about, 4 tablespoons of chopped garlic, 2 roasted piquillo peppers, which will give it a really nice thing. Now, here's what I like. I want you to get 1 pound of the largest shrimp that you can find. And now, if you can get them in the shell, all the better. I'd rather you do, because part of this eating this with your fingers and peeling the shell off the shrimp after we cook it. So if you can get already some really nice large shrimp in the shell, I'm going to want you to have those in the shell. Now, hardcore ones, we can keep it in the shell, and we can also take out the vein in the belly if we need to, and that's probably a good idea in most cases, and I'll tell you how to do that as we go. Now, I want to go for mussels and clams. So I'm going to go ahead and get 1 pound of really nice mussels. I want to clean those babies really well. You know how to remove the beard. You can go to my Facebook page, and I'll teach you how to do that. But you want clean, nice mussels. Clams, you want tight clams, meaning the shell is tight. You want them alive, okay? We're taking no prisoners today. You want 1/2 pound of clams and 1 pound of mussels. Okay, you have 1 pound of these gigantic shrimp. Now, I'm going to go a little crazy today. I want you to get 8 oysters. I want you to get baker-sized oysters, really big ones. And in most cases, you can just buy them already out of the shell, and I prefer you to do that just to save you a little bit of time, but make sure they're fresh. Okay, are you getting excited yet? Now, I do a little bit something different also. I get some squid, and I love squid. And you can take it and you can do a couple of different ways. You can buy the squid steaks and pound them. What I would do is get the rings and the tentacles. Oh, you're getting scared now? Don't get scared. Okay, and get 1 pound of that and just make sure it's you get it from your fishmonger and it's all cut up fresh and it's beautiful. All right, now, some people love to do this. I'm going to tell you how to do it too. If you really, this is, especially in the Northwest, we have the beautiful clams and the mussels. Let's go for 1 whole Dungeness crab, okay? Now, this is going to be really tricky because you're going to put the crab alive In most cases, you're going to have to butcher it yourself, and you know how to do that, and you break it up. But I want you to be really careful because we want to save the head shell and we want to save the liver and that. So we're going to use that. And speaking of liver, right now I need you to think about what I like to do is the whole chickens that you got, remove the liver. Okay, you're probably going to have four of them. And what I would do is go to the market to get this. Go ahead and get yourself another, maybe one or two pieces of nice-sized chicken liver. Okay, because what we're going to do, the key of paella is to make this paste. It's amazing. And I want you to get that liver and put it in a bowl. Don't be afraid of it. Now, listen, this is tradition I'm telling you about here. And we're going to make it just like the family makes it, way, way years of tradition. And it's all come from research and development, okay? Now, you want to go really decadent here. This is it. This is the piece de resistance. We want to get some live lobsters. You want to try that? So one, let's get one because, my gosh, you can afford to buy more than one. But, you know, this is not going to be a cheap dish, but you're going to have six people around. You're going to feed everybody. If you divide it up, it'll end up being about $10 a person. And if you went into a restaurant to get paella, you're talking about $30 in some cases. You know what I'm saying? All right. So we're going to make this for quite a bit less. All right. We got all our seafood, all our fish, all that stuff nice and cleaned and ready to go. Now, paella is rice. So we need what's called bamba or calasparra rice. It's a short grain Spanish rice. And you can get that if you look in the rice section of the market, you'll see it. It's specific kind of rice. You want to get that. Now, on the recipe page, I'll place all this stuff onto Facebook a little bit later today. You'll have some choices of other starches. Now, remember I told you in some cases they actually use the pasta type material. Stick with the rice as far as traditional paella, and you can read some of my research about the other styles. And once you make this, believe me, it's going to become a family tradition, and you'll make it much more than once. You can try different versions. Okay, now, I like to get a couple of bay leaves, and remember, I like to remove them after we cook. I'm going to use about a cup of dry wine. I'm going to also use about a half a cup. This has nothing to do with the liquid so much. I want you to get, well, let's go for 2/3 of a cup of frozen peas. Now, remember on the side, I have plenty of fresh parsley and lemon wedges. I almost said plenty of whatever I said. It wasn't going to be that. All right. And make sure that you have that. Everybody take a deep breath, and here we go in the process. It's going to take a little bit of a while. Okay, so here's what we do. We get our paella pan on the fire. Now, I want to talk about that real quick. You can use a paella pan on top of a Weber, on top of a grill, but you need to have a fairly good amount of heat, okay? So you start your coals really early. Now, the idea of doing it over a smoky sort of pit or barbecue is to get a little bit of smoky flavor and the smoke into flavoring the broth, and it will. All right, so get your paella pan. You should have a medium heat going. And at that point, I want you to take all the broth and put it in there, and also a little bit of the whole onion and a little bit of that pimenton, that pepper, okay? Now, here's what I'm going to do with the saffron. About 5 minutes before, you take a little bit of tea water that's a little bit less than boiling, okay? And you drop the saffron leaves into about 3 tablespoons of this water. Make it 4 and let it soak for about 3 to 4 minutes. Then I want you to carefully take a little tea strainer and drain that liquid into that broth. Okay, you should get a very red sort of liquid. Now, in some cases, people will take that remaining saffron and chop it up really good and put it into the rice. Go ahead. Be my guest. You don't have to do it. You've already drained most of the flavor out of it. But if you feel like, hey, I paid, you know, $35 a pound for this stuff, I bet, you know, use it all up. You can do that. But it's not absolutely necessary because, believe it or not, you got everything you paid for out of the way I just explained it. All right, the broth is going really good. At this point, Don, let's start it out. I take, you know, all that and I cover it for maybe 15 minutes. And then I take, you know, that onion, that whole onion, and pull it out from afterwards. It's just the flavor of the broth. And then measure it. You need about, make sure you have at this point in time, you should have at least 5 to 6 cups. All right, now go ahead and cut the chickens into small pieces and the whole breast into like 4 parts and each thigh like into 2 parts. And the bony tip of the leg chopped off. We don't want that. Get rid of it. And then the wing tip also discarded. The rest of the things separated, and dry the pieces really well and sprinkle them with salt. And then paella pan, I would say at this point in time, what we're going to do is take everything that you have so far broth-wise and pour it off, and you're going to have a blank paella pan again. Now, take that liver I talked to you about, okay, and put it into a small teeny frying pan and just lightly cook it for about 3 minutes. And then I want you to take that and put it into a mortar and pestle or a bowl and a stir and mash that into a paste, all right? So you're making a paste with that incredible liver, pasting it up really well. Now, take 4 cups of broth, put it into your paella pan, back in, take all that liver mixture and take a whisk and whisk that into the broth. It's going to make it a little creamier and a little thick. Trust me, the flavor is going to blow your mind. It is. Okay, now I want you at this point in time is to take that pasty and a little bit of broth. It's going to reduce down and just, again, take it and put it back into the bowl. So we're moving it twice, okay? Now, it's okay for the liver and stuff and a little residue to stay in the pan. At this point, put a little bit of that oil, a little bit of olive oil in there, and go ahead and put your pieces in there right away. Put your chicken in there and start, you know, adding it little by little over a heat until it's kind of golden. And then once they're golden, see, we're using a paella pan for everything. Take that and remove it, okay? Now, at this point in time, I take the chorizo and the ham to the pan and stir fry it about 10 minutes maybe. Add the chopped onion back into it. Take the scallions. Take the garlic and the pimentos and everything like that and saute until the onion is pretty wilted. Now, the reason I say you don't have to double cook your shrimp at this point in time, you just don't, okay? So sometimes people will take, it just depends what you want to do. They'll add some of the shrimp and the lobster and the crab right now for about 2 to 3 minutes or until it's barely turning pink, okay? And then remove the shrimp and lobster again from the pan. So we're basically just glazing and grazing it real quick. And then we'll move on. So I have all this stuff slightly cooked. Now, at this point in time, I take that rice and I put the rice in the pan and I start stirring with the oil to coat it well. It's raw at this point. Put in about 5 teaspoons of the chopped parsley and the crumbled bay leaves a little bit, and you can make that in advance up to this point. Stir in the chicken broth, 4 of the cups of it, and then the wine, and let it go. Salt it to taste it, just till it's right, and bring it to a boil. And cook this uncovered. Okay? Stirring it occasionally, maybe about 10 minutes. By this time, it's incredible. You lower the heat a little bit, okay, and take the shrimp and the chicken and literally bury it in the rice. By the way, the color is going to blow your mind at this point. You're noticing what's happening. It's getting kind of nice and pink. Go ahead and stick, like under a blanket, the shrimp and the chicken under the rice, okay? Now, what I do, I like to take the whole clams and just in a circle, make it beautiful. In a circle, put the clams around the edge and push them in, okay? You're going to push them into the rice. Now, remember, you're adding a little bit more broth. This is still cooking. We got cooking to go. Do the mussels with the same thing. So you got this beautiful thing with the edge that will look like some sort of a painting. And you can decorate it with lobster pieces. And this is in the shell still, remember? But make it easy. So in other words, lobster claw, easy to open up and take out. The lobster tail at this point in time, you're going to keep it whole, and then we're going to take it apart, and we're going to chop it up so everybody gets some of it, okay? Now, I want you to take this literally. There's a couple of different ways to do it, but what I like to get everything together, I like to take everything and literally put your Weber top on at this point in time, or if you don't have a Weber top, take some foil and put it over the whole thing and let it cook really slow for about 20 more minutes. At this point in time, remove it from the heat and let it sit like on top of a rack or something, just lightly covered with the foil for about 10 minutes. And you're smelling this and you're seeing steam coming out of the top. Okay, give it a little teeny sprinkle of broth over the top, and guess what? Oh my gosh, you're ready to eat it. You serve it with lemon wedges, serve it with some more fresh parsley, and you don't need anything else except a couple of little condiments on the side. You know, paella, by the way, some people, I always thought, you know, where's the bread? You always see you want bread. But if you make the paella, it becomes so fluffy and flavorful, you really don't need any bread. But if you want some bread, get a really nice Italian or French loaf. Slice it really thin. Now, I want to tell you how to make a quick aioli, because in Spain, the first little munchie that you have, I want you to get a half of a cup to a cup of mayonnaise, okay? Very simple. Just a tablespoon of lemon juice. I want you to take about a tablespoon and a half of really, really nice fine minced garlic and stir it in with the olive oil and everything, and the lemon juice into the mayonnaise, and you made your perfect little aioli. Then I would get an assortment of really nice olives in a separate bowl, and then get yourself some really nice thin slices of bread. And guess what? You can be eating your paella and taking a mussel and taking it with a little bit of the rice, the fresh clam with the beautiful shell open, scraping it out, taking a little bit of the broth, because there'll be a little bit of broth, and putting it over. And by the way, we have a little bit of extra broth left from cooking, so we're heating that up, and I'm going to serve everybody just a little bit of bowl in it so they can dip their fish in it if they like, or add it. That's this incredible paella dish, and let me tell you what, I love it. And in this campground that we're talking from right now, this, in our mind, this imaginary campground, you have the beautiful sun out, you're laying outside with your family, you're drinking some really nice simple lemonade or beverage of your choice. You're just taking advantage of the sand and the water, and you're eating this dish, which you're thinking, oh, my gosh, I could be in Brooklyn, I could be in San Francisco, I could be in Northwest Washington, but actually I'm on the island of Bita in a campground. Hey, listen to this. This is a quick little salad that you can do with it, and a lot of people like this one. Check this out.
Well, as the weather gets a little bit warmer, we find ourselves wanting to eat a little bit more of fresh vegetables and salad. Here's a great salad I had very often when I lived in Spain, and I think you're just going to love it. First, here's what you need. You need a head of really nice, crunchy romaine lettuce, two tomatoes, a half a cup of really nice Spanish olives, the green ones with the little red pimento in it will do good, a half a cup of corn. Now, you can use a frozen kernel, or if you have fresh corn, you can cook it and cut the kernels off, and that works really great. About 4 ounces of really nice tuna fish. If you go for the can, just get a can of nice albacore. Some olive oil, some fresh garlic, 2 pieces of crunchy French bread, a little bit of fresh feta cheese, about 3 green onions, and you're ready to go. Here's what you do. Make sure the lettuce is nice and cold. Take the top parts of the lettuce and keep the nice crunchy parts and cut them into small pieces. Take your tomatoes, cut them into wedges. Take your tuna, initially, take it out of the can, drain it really well, and put it in about 1/3 of an inch of olive oil. And just take the olive oil and baste the tuna with the olive oil. Cut a couple of pieces of fresh garlic and put it in the oil with the tuna as well. And let it sit in the fridge for about 2 hours. Now get a big bowl, take your nice cold lettuce, and place it in the bowl. And take your tomatoes and wedge them sort of around the lettuce. Take your olives, cut them in half, and just go ahead and toss them over everything in the bowl. Take your corn and do the same thing, just sort of toss it over all the lettuce. Then, slowly, take the tuna with a fork and take the chunks and spread them really nicely over the whole salad. Then take the remaining olive oil, it's already gotten a little bit of the tuna, and sprinkle that over the top. Now take the pieces of bread, spread a little bit more of that olive oil over the bread, and put them in a frying pan and just saute them lightly until they're golden brown. Then take a knife and cut them into small cubes and throw that over your salad. You've just made kind of a simple, quick crouton. And take your scallion onions, clean them really well, and stick them right inside the salad. I like to take the juice of about a half of a lemon and squeeze it over the whole thing. There you go. You have a fresh salad atún, something that they eat on the Spanish coast a lot in hot summery days. It's simple, it's inexpensive, and I think you'll love it. This is Chef Stuardo with another Cooking Minute. Hey, let's eat.
Okay, so that salad will go really well with it. All right, my gosh, this tastes so good. The peas, the freshness of it all, the fresh parsley, the lemon. Oh, my gosh. I can't wait till you make it so you can taste it. Now, listen, you can write me at Chef Stuardo, C-H, E-F as in Frank, S as in Sam, T-U-A-R-T-O, at hotmail.com. Please go to the Facebook page, Chef Stuardo's Foodomania, and like us. Immediately, you'll be able to see the pictures. You'll be able to pick up the recipe. You'll be able to know what to do. And at Blog Talk Radio, remember, all my shows are archived. You can go back and listen to everyone. Write me. Nobody called today, but, you know, this is a lot of food. It's Foodomania. We covered a lot of ground. Thank you for being here. I look forward to seeing you next week with a brand new show. Take care. Have a good summer so far. Bye. Anytime at all.